Hello and welcome to the Times Aerospace podcast for the Middle East and Africa, where we look at the news and background stories affecting the aviation, defence and aerospace industries across the whole region. I'm Alan Peaford. Now, if you have concerns about the aerospace industry's commitment to sustainability issues, then this is a milestone week for you. We hear from Glenn Llewellyn, the head of zero emissions for Airbus, about a new technology concept that was launched this week with a family of hydrogen-powered aircraft. And with the MEBAR show off this year's calendar, we can give you a little fix on business aviation matters when we're joined by Rob DiCastri, the president and CEO of Royal Jet, which has the largest fleet of Boeing business jets in the world and regularly moves African heads of state and leading Middle Eastern diplomats and industrialists around the world. And we'll be getting his thoughts on the state of the market, and we'll also hope to get his views on the idea of hydrogen-powered business jets. But first, let's hear all of our region's aerospace and defence news headlines from Marcella Nethersole at the Times Aerospace News Desk.
Hello, and here is this week's aerospace news from across the Middle East and Africa. Airbus has revealed three concepts for the world's first zero-emission commercial aircraft, all running on hydrogen, and say they could enter service by 2035. These concepts each represent a different approach to achieving zero-emission flight, exploring various technology pathways and aerodynamic configurations. The three concepts, all codenamed Zero-E, include a 200-seat turbofan narrowbody, a 100-seat turboprop for regional and domestic, and a very futuristic blended wing body design in which wings merge with the main body of the aircraft and will carry 200 people 2,000 miles. Boeing's 2020 Eco Demonstrator, a 787 Dreamliner which will be delivered to Etihad Airways in the coming weeks, has been tested in the air, with the company saying the program will improve sustainability for airlines, passengers and the environment. The demonstrator has been looking at reducing noise in crews and quieter landings, improving flight paths while reducing pilot workload, onboard disinfection of the cabin space and use of sustainable fuels. Flight testing on four projects was conducted last week over 8 days at Boeing's facility in Glasgow, Montana, and during two transcontinental flights between Seattle, Washington, and North Charleston in South Carolina. Air Namibia has said it's negotiating a state bailout after it reportedly requires $11.6 million to restart the airline due to COVID-19. Spokesman Twaku Kaofa said, "Our operations have been negatively affected by COVID-19 due to the decrease in travel demand. We continue to redefine our strategy for the restart of all operations when borders are reopened eventually, notwithstanding the impact of COVID-19 on global traffic demand." Rand Air wants to bring in its first dedicated freighter as it seeks to take advantage of the rising demand for air cargo services. The African carrier is looking at acquiring a cargo freighter in the near future, its chief executive Yvonne Makolo said earlier this month. She confirms that, as with its passenger fleet, Rand Air is likely to work with future partner Qatar Airways, which is taking a 49% stake in the airline on securing the aircraft. Saudi Aircargo has added a Boeing 747-400 freighter, bringing the total number to 7 aircraft. The company said the new aircraft will boost the cargo and supply operations and help meet the significant surge in demand of medicine, medical and preventative equipment on other similar goods. More than 200 security trays will be redistributed from Edinburgh Airport in Scotland to airports in Africa. This will help staff train for security inspections. The trays were taken out of use at Edinburgh Airport earlier this year and will be reused in airports throughout Africa, rather than being destroyed as the airport continues to improve its sustainability approach. Gordon Robertson, Director of Communications at Edinburgh Airport, said, "Reusing items rather than disposing of them is part of a circular economy that the airport wants to be a part of as we continue to improve our sustainability approach, and reusing these trays has the added benefit of allowing staff in other areas of the world to train to the same high standards that our staff do." The Mohammed bin Rashid Space Centre and NASA have signed a strategic agreement to train 4 Emirati astronauts at NASA's Johnson Space Centre. The partnership aims to prepare Emirati astronauts for advanced space missions by providing them with high-level expertise and knowledge from NASA. ATR has announced the successful first flight of its new purpose-built regional freighter aircraft. During the flight, crew on board performed a number of tests to measure the new aircraft's flight envelope and flight performance. The first delivery of this aircraft will be to FedEx, who placed a firm order of 30 aircraft plus 20 options in November 2017. And finally, a little bit of fun from Galula founder Gidon Novik after he's asked South Africans to put their creativity to the test and suggest a name for the country's new airline being launched between Novik and Global Aviation later this year. Novik said he's looking for the name that is unique, aspirational, memorable and cool. The airline's first flight, which Novik said was inspired by Uber, is planned between Johannesburg and Cape Town this December. Well, I would love to see some of the entries, wouldn't you, Alan? It's back to you in the studio.
Thanks, Ella. I remember the internet choice for a polar research vessel coming up with that Boaty McBoat face. So I hope Gidon keeps a casting vote for this. Well, I think there might be a lot of debate about names for the new Airbus concept for the family of hydrogen-powered aircraft, ranging from a 100-seater domestic or regional turboprop through to a 200-seat narrow-body using hydrogen in a turbofan engine, and finally a blended wing. Now, as Glenn Llewellyn, the head of the European manufacturer's zero emissions business, explained, these are interesting times.
The next 5 years are really important to us for developing the technology that's required for a zero emission aircraft. We're going to be developing the technology, testing that technology on ground, and what we're also going to start seeing are flight demonstrators, which means we're going to take that technology, put it into aircraft and fly it, test it to its limits and really understand the performance. Hydrogen is really interesting because it can be produced with renewable energy. It's essentially a surrogate for renewable energy on board the aircraft. On top, as the world goes towards a Paris Agreement, which I think we all believe is necessary, hydrogen is going to be used by several industries in order to bring down its CO2 emissions. The cost is going to go down, and that makes it also very interesting for aviation.
Well, although hydrogen is only a third the weight of kerosene, the volume in its liquefied form is four times greater than traditional aviation fuels. And that throws up its own challenges that will need cross-industry involvement and collaboration.
The three concept planes that we've revealed today all have hydrogen propulsion systems on board. What they show is the huge versatility that hydrogen can bring the aviation industry, because hydrogen is working from less than 100-seat aircraft all the way up to 200-plus seat aircraft with varying ranges. Airbus had set itself a huge ambition to deliver a zero-emission aircraft to its customers by 2035. Honestly, though, we can't do this on our own. We need regulators, airports, energy suppliers, technology partners, and it's through working with all of these colleagues that really this is going to become reality.
Well, I hope it does. And as an industry, it's important we push the message that change on sustainability is happening as we head for those 2035 targets. And at the same time, of course, Boeing, working with Etihad, have the eco-demonstrator Dreamliner flying at the moment, and that's been trying some interesting technology to reduce noise and emissions. It's all happening. There is actually a good, strong message out there. And we're going to be looking at more of that in programmes over the next few weeks. One sector of the current aviation market that anecdotally is not faring as badly as the airlines is business aviation. Now, last week, of course, we heard that the Middle East Business Aviation Association postponed its biennial MIBAR show from December through to next February, which is a real shame, as it would have been the only show for the private, corporate and business aircraft manufacturers, charterers and customers to have made it this year. But we can still get a view on how things are really going. We're delighted to be joined on the programme now by Rob De Castri, the President and CEO of Royal Jet, the luxury flight services operator from Abu Dhabi with the world's largest BBJ fleet. Now, Rob's been in the Middle East, where he played a key role in establishing National Air Services, FlyNAS, and that's NetJets Middle East, which is now called NASJet in Saudi Arabia, as CFO and head of strategy. So he's been around for more than a decade in this region. Rob, it's great to have you with us. I guess, like me, you're going to be missing the MIBAR show happening as well, aren't you, this year?
Yeah, it is. It is disappointing, Alan. Nice to be here, by the way. It was. We were looking forward to it because, of course, as you say, the only show really globally of its type that would have happened this year. So we were hoping to be there and it'd be sort of the start of the comeback and discussions and meetings with people. But of course, we understand. You know, it's out of everyone's control. And better safe than sorry.
So if you look at where we are now, I mean, how's Royal Jet been performing during 2020 with all of the upheaval or lockdown?
I call it a bit of a roller coaster. It's nothing we've ever seen before, of course, nothing Royal Jet's ever seen in its 17, 18 years of existence. It really started back in January, February, the flying reduced. It wasn't sort of clear what was going on, but there were some reductions, maybe 10 or 15% below previous year. And then March, sort of mid-March, when the lockdown started happening, especially the lockdown here in the UAE started happening, then the activity just dove. Really throughout April, May, and June, we were only doing 10, 15, 20% at most of what we had done previous year. And all of that was basically some repatriation flights, a few medevacs here and there, so a little bit of diplomatic flying, but very little. And people were just, there was nowhere you could go, of course, right? All the borders were closed. It was a total lockdown. So that carried on through the end of June. Luckily, things started to open up in July. August was even better. September's been even better than that. So it has been growing. We're around the 50% mark now compared to where we were last year. But I have to say last year was a banner year. Last year was exceptionally positive. So, you know, we're optimistic right now that it's going to keep carrying on the upslope. But of course, it depends on so many factors, so many borders opening and closing and second waves and all those kinds of things.
We know that IATA for the commercial air traffic has been getting very concerned and saying that it's making a huge difference, that there are a lot more people that would want to fly than actually will because of the quarantines. When you come to your end, where you're often talking about moving diplomats, moving heads of state and so on, are you as affected by that? Do you think people are not chartering aircraft because of the quarantines? Or are your market kind of above that because they make the rules?
Yeah, it's a bit different because, of course, we can do a diplomatic flight where you've got diplomatic permits and there's a, you know, diplomatic reason for it where you can get past the rules and they can make exceptions and things like that. We can do repatriation flights where it's all repatriation and it's focused on that. So you do get the permits a little bit easier. And I think private aviation in general can get to places that commercial aviation has a harder time doing. You know, we don't need bilateral agreements. We don't need, load factors to be a certain level or something like that.
Do you think for business aviation, corporate aviation, private aviation as a whole, the COVID experience could actually be a kickstart for more people to recognize the value of private aviation?
Yeah, it could. A lot of people are talking about that these days. It could be an opportunity. We and other private aviation companies are getting a lot more inquiries than we used to, especially from new potential customers who've flown first class, or, you know, haven't tried private jets, but maybe they want to. A lot of them kind of make that inquiry and then they're like, oh, okay, that's way too expensive. That's more than I thought. So I'll move to another option. But if, especially when you're talking about groups, corporate groups, family groups, things like that, where they do typically fly a number of people, you know, 10, 12, 20, 30, 40 people, where they would fly business or first class, it is, they can swallow it basically. It's not too expensive. So we've actually been doing some of those flights that maybe we wouldn't have done before because the airlines don't have the frequencies that they had. They don't have the first class options, things like that. So it's bringing some new customers. Will they stay with private aviation? Of course, we hope so. We hope that, you know, once you fly first, you don't want to go back to economy. So once you fly private, you know, you go through the private terminal with the privacy and the flexibility on your timing and all the benefits that come with private aviation. Once you've sampled that, of course, we hope to hook them. But there will be an element that will come and go, and I think there will be an element that will stay.
We talked before, maybe 18 months ago at the Saudi Air Show, for example, and we talked about Royal Jet's plans, and you were talking then about perhaps basing aircraft in places like Saudi Arabia, maybe even in Africa, if there was a possibility there. What's happening to those five-year plans now? Are they all just pushed back a couple of years, or are they still on?
I mean, it's the same as everyone, really. I mean, it's a delay. It's a delay. We're not canceling any of these projects. We're trying to do as much as we can kind of in the background while the slowdown is happening. We're trying to work on some upgrades of aircraft, getting some high-speed Wi-Fi added, doing things like that, looking at our FBO and refurbishing our FBO and trying to come out of this looking better, with a better service, maybe a brand refresh and those kinds of things. But actually putting aircraft in places and that had to be delayed because, of course, there's a cost to that. And when there's a lockdown, there's a lockdown. We actually had an aircraft. We had a BBJ in Eswatini in southern Africa there. We put it there, I believe, in February, just before, of course, the shutdown. We kept it there until April, May, but we just decided we had to bring it home at that point. But that's fully in the plans, putting multiple aircraft in Africa, looking very, very closely at the Saudi market. The Saudi market, we've talked about it before, historically, biggest market in the Middle East, a lot bigger than the UAE, and there's a lack of capacity there. It's of course, things are locked down still to a large extent right now, so now's not the time, but it's still a strong business model. It's still very feasible to have aircraft based there, serving the market that will start to grow back.
Now, we heard in the program earlier, Airbus talking about the hydrogen program, the launch they had this week, and the hope that by 2035, they're going to have a narrow body aircraft, looks a bit like the A320, just a bit longer to get all the hydrogen in. How do you see that working with business aviation? I mean, do you see a company like, of course, we're going to be on the farm or on the beach by the time this happens, but do you see a day when Royal Jet will be going, yeah, we want a hydrogen aircraft?
Really, Alan, it comes down to price point. It's, you know, if the product comes out from the manufacturers that is reasonably, is not overly more expensive than the traditional product that we're flying, of course, we'll go for it. We had this discussion in the last time the summit was around, and just the same way I said that customers will buy the supersonic aircraft, a certain number will, customers will buy a more environmentally friendly aircraft. They will buy a more, you know, they will want to reduce the impact they're having on the environment, for sure, as long as the premium to pay on top of the sort of traditional option isn't too much. I mean, the 10 to 15% premium, would you pay that on your organic vegetables? Would you pay that for, you know, for a better fuel, a cleaner fuel for your automobile? Right now, one of the big things that's facing that's an opportunity, I guess, coming for the aviation market is the sustainable fuels. So right now, as far as I know, that they're quite a lot more expensive than the traditional fuel. So the supply isn't necessarily that big yet. The buying of it, the demand on it's not that big yet. But as the prices come closer to each other, more and more people will buy it.
Well, that's it from us this week. There's a busy week ahead, actually, with the virtual Global Aerospace Summit happening in Abu Dhabi on Monday and Tuesday. You can find out more about that event and register for free by going to www.aerospacesummit.com. I must say, the summit includes some pretty good keynote speakers as well. Lockheed Martin's president, Jim Taiclet, will be giving his perspective on what the modern battle space looks like today and how he believes it will look in years to come. Oh, and if you haven't heard enough of me already, I'll be talking to the leaders from Boeing, Etihad and Safran about what the new normal would be for air travellers. Well, next week, we're going to have some highlights from that event, and our defence editor, Alan Walls, is going to be looking at military training in Nigeria. So that's all to come. Well, thanks for listening. Stay safe and see you next week. Goodbye.